Our lecturer for the evening, Rabbi Reuven Brady.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Eisenberg. As Rabbi Eisenberg mentioned, our kollel is very proud to partner with Religious Zionists of Chicago, with Mizrahi. The very fact that we are Yeshiva University in Tor Mitzion is part of that, is a testament to this concept that we need to put in effort. Gemara says, "Tzion Dorish Einla Mechlal Deboi Drisha." If we want to see Tzion, our vision of Tzion, if we want to see that develop, Mechlal Deboi Drisha, we have to put it on the agenda. We got to make it, you know, in the forefront of our mattering map. And so, to that end, the kollel really—it's important for us on many levels to partner with the RZC to bring Tzionut and Torat Eretz Yisrael to the front. I also want to echo his thanks to Rabbi Yoshua Liss. Rabbi Liss is right there. This part of this project actually got started when the Lisses who came to us from Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Liss was in the Hezdu Yeshiva of Yeshivat HaKotel for the last 8-9 years, where he served in the army and he was doing his limudim. When he was coming, we had discussed the fact that Tzionut is something that's very much a part of who he is. Part of his own journey of having gone on Aliyah from Wales in the United Kingdom. So actually, it's been several months of emails. You know, the co-presidents can attest to the fact there are many emails going back. So really, the Yasher Koach goes to Rabbi Liss. I really have nothing to do. I just showed up here. So my goal tonight is to try to share with you a little bit about Yerushalayim, but to do so in a way that we can encounter some history, encounter perhaps one of the most, if not the most, important figure in the development of religious Zionism, and maybe even some of the ideals that religious Zionism is all about, that it's built on. So the question is, what does Yerushalayim mean? So I bet if we had like a round table, we could gather many different responses of what Yerushalayim means to us individually, to how we understand it in the context of Yiddishkeit. But what I found as I was preparing for this year is that to one person, Yerushalayim meant something that I never would have figured if I would have sat here and thought about it for a long time. And that person was Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook. And that's what I'd like to focus on tonight, one aspect of how Rav Cook viewed Yerushalayim. And to do that, some people in the room are going to start to get very uncomfortable. But I want to begin and kind of end with a not so well-known aspect of Rav Cook's life that I'd like to explore together with you from a historical vantage point. And that is that Rav Cook began actually to create his own movement, his own party, so to speak. And it was called Degel Yerushalayim. So why was Rav Cook creating his own movement? And by the way, this was taking place after Mizrahi had already founded. So that's why some people in here might get a little bit nervous. I'm not saying that we should disband Mizrahi and start Degel Yerushalayim. I'm just saying that we should really explore what was going on. Why did Rav Cook think there should be an alternative to the Mizrahi? And why did he call it Degel Yerushalayim? And what does it have to do with what Rav Cook thought about Yerushalayim in general?
Is this a political party?
We'll get to it, exactly what it was. So to do that, I think we need to kind of walk through a little bit the biography of Rav Cook so we can understand where it fits in the totality of his life, where it fits in the development of Eretz Yisrael. So I have here my handy-dandy little chalkboard, and we're just going to kind of follow through the life and times of Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Cook. So Rav Cook is born in 1865. Can you see over there? No, you can't see anything probably. A little better? Can everybody see?
Marble.
Okay. Oh, even better. We'll put it up over there. Okay. How's that?
It's too bad.
You can't, some people can't reach it. That's okay. Rav Cook is born in Lithuania in 1865. And in 1886, He begins his studies in the very famous Volozhin Yeshiva. Now, the Volozhin Yeshiva didn't last for very long after that. It was headed by the Gaon, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, who shortly would close the Volozhin Yeshiva, but Rav Kook was, at that time already, considered one of the top, if not the top, students when he was studying in Volozhin. In 1888, he becomes a Rav in a small town called Zimel, and then 7 years later in another small Lithuanian town called Boisk. In 1904, Rav Kook goes on Aliyah and settles in Yafo. Okay? He settles in Yafo in 1904, and then in 1914, he travels to Switzerland. Rav Kook actually did quite a bit of traveling. At a certain point, Rav Kook actually had gone to America to raise funds for some of the impoverished communities in Europe. So Rav Kook travels to Switzerland. But something happens shortly after he arrives in Switzerland that gives him a lot of heartache and gets him stuck in Europe. What's that? World War I. So World War I breaks out in 1914. Rav Kook is now stuck in Europe and he can't get back to Israel. So he makes his way to the United Kingdom and he becomes a Rav in a shul. I believe the shul still exists today in London, called Machzike Hadas. And he serves there in the capacity of the Rav until 1919. Rav Kook returns to Eretz Yisrael. But this time, instead of coming back to Yafo, he goes up to Yerushalayim, where he establishes the Rabbanut HaRashit LeYisrael, the chief rabbinate of what that time was called Palestine, in 1921. The Rabbanut. In 1924, he establishes what he calls the Yeshiva HaMerkazit HaOlamit, the Central Universal Yeshiva. Today we call it Merkaz HaRav. That was Rav Kook's Yeshiva. The building is still there. You can go visit it. And then on Gimel Elul in 1935, Rav Kook passes away. Okay. So this is kind of the timeline of Rav Kook's life and how things are moving along. So while Rav Kook was in Europe, he was already writing about and speaking about and educating about Eretz Yisrael and this long desire that he had, this deep burning desire to go to Eretz Yisrael. Rav Kook was, it's impossible to describe, and that's why, thank God, we have Rav Schwartz next time who's going to talk about Rav Kook. But this is just one foot. He was a great poet, he was a great philosopher, a tremendous halachist. But while he's in 1914, while he is in Switzerland, he is actually connecting with many different European Jews of different places. In 1916, he's in England, and then in 1917, something important happens. Oops. What happens in 1917?
Balfour.
Okay. Shortly after the Balfour Declaration, Rav Kook comes up with an idea that he starts promoting as a new movement, an alternative to the Mizrahi and to the World Zionist Organization. Now, we often don't think of Rav Kook in terms of Kol Koris. The reason I gave you folders is because if anybody wants to take the materials, you're more than welcome. This is going to be a somewhat participatory history lecture, so people will be able to get up, collect papers, hand them around. What you have in front of you right now is a Kol Koris that Rav Kook wrote that was published. Now this, if you talk about Kol Koris, while you're passing it out, I'll just share some non-essential information, so if somebody can't see or hear, they don't really care anyway. This book is called Kruzei HaRi'ya, which is a collection of various Kol Koris, pamphlets, publications, announcements, open letters that Rav Kook wrote in various forms. Some of them have to do with protesting soccer on Shabbos. Some of them have to do with suffrage and women voting in elections. Some of them have to do with food from Eretz Yisrael, of all kinds. What you have in front of you is a Kol Kore that Rav Kook writes, and again, here we are right now in the end of 1917, beginning of 1918, while he's still in England, communicating with Jews around the world by letter, where he's calling all the Jews to join a new movement. And we can read it together. I would read it with you if I had a sheet, but I have to find it. One second. We'll get to this book in a minute. If somebody has a peat sheet they could lend me, it'll go faster than me finding it in here. Thank you.
Says Rav Kook, Le'olam ha-kasher shel shalmei emunei Yisrael, achim chavivim, my dear brothers, b'simcha v'tikva, with joy and hope, I'm announcing to you ki ha-histadrut shel his-achdus olameinu ha-yisraeli ha-kasher, the unity, the organization of the unity of our world, the Jewish world, the proper Jewish world, l'shem binyan umaseinu be'eretz Yisrael, for the building of our nation and land of Israel, b'matzav atzmi miyuchad muvusas al pi ha'ofi shel ha-kashrus ha-yisraelis, through the proper lens of Yiddishkeit, al yedei histadrusenu, through our organization, Yerushalayim. That's the name. Hischil hadavar lotzeis el hapoal. It begins. So we're going to put this on the side. Again, you can take it home and study it. It's a very interesting piece of history right here. Meanwhile, while this is going on, Rav Kook is sitting in London and he starts writing letters to many great Jewish figures, some of them great rabbinic leaders, and many of them are actually collected in a series of volumes called Igros HaRiyah, the letters of Rav Kook, and many of these are in the third volume of Igros HaRiyah, so I brought several of them for you. So this is a selection of Igros from the Igros HaRiyah. You'll look on the first page, when you get it, if you get it. So this collection is a very interesting collection of letters. He has a letter to his mother where he thanks her for sending him Nash in the mail, which made me feel so good, because then you know you're not alone when your mother is sending you Nash. And you go, Rav Kook, I think his mother was still somewhere in Eastern Europe, or maybe she was in Israel, wherever she was, but she's sending him Nash. And you have the letters. You have the letters in front of you. I put them out of order just so you should get a sense of how active Rav Kook was. This top letter is Tuf, Kuf, Mem, Aleph. So we're in Chela Gilmels of Igros HaRiyah. This is a letter, well, who is it addressed to? Bini Yekiri Shlita. That is Rav Tzvi Yehuda HaKohen Kook, the son of Rav Kook. And this is dated when? February 11th, 1919. Rav Kook writes to him, second paragraph, Harbe Hishtadalti Lahasig, I'm in the blue pages on the front, Harbe Hishtadalti Lahasig Rishayon Linsoa Lesirich. I really tried to get a transit paper to get to Zurich. Avol Hadvarim Yigayim V'Ief Shashayetza Rishayon Lepoal, except it's going to take a long time. And therefore, you're having a convention, I wanted to be there, I just can't be there. So what do we need to do? So he describes later how I got various letters from different people all around, and some of these letters are in Yiddish, as you'll see on the next page, which is not for right now, you can hold it. But Rav Kook is extremely active in building this whole movement that he's calling Yerushalayim. Back in Israel, when Rav Kook arrives now, remember that letter is in January 1919. Later in 1919, he comes back to Eretz Yisrael, and then you find, again, not necessarily associated with Rav Kook, you find this. A huge Pashkevilim that are found all around. This is Rav Kook's stationery. A.I. Kook, Chief Rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, Jerusalem, Palestine. Where is he living? Yerushalayim, because he's come back. And this is Achinu HaYikarim, a whole movement of, and you see on the side it's in English, address, if you want to contact him, the Jerusalem Organization, Jerusalem, Palestine. And so here you have the whole Megillah, again, one of these letters. Now, where did I find this? So I have to be Makar Tov. Rav Neria, Zichron Levracha, has a tremendous sefer called Moadei HaRi'iyah. Now, this is all about the different holidays, and in there he has a section about Yerushalayim. And he references an amazing work. An amazing work that was published in 1941. At this point, the people who don't like history, they're so gone. This is totally not for them. But if you do like history, this part may actually be extremely interesting. In 1941, none other than Rav Meir Berlin published, remember, Rav Kook died in 1935, published a collection of random, scattered personal writings of Rav Kook on different topics. Essential topics, what we might call even about the basics of religious Zionism. And he collected them in a book, which is not so easy to get a hold of, called Chazon HaGu'ula. But, thanks to a website called HebrewBooks.org, which anybody can get, you can get the whole Sefer. And so I did. So I had the Sefer sent to the printer. So in the back of this Sefer, Chazon HaGu'ula, Rav Meir Bar-Ilan, as he was later known, has a whole section about Degel Yerushalayim. And he forwards you to this information and these very interesting Pashkevilim that Rav Kook had put out.
Now, at this point, Rav Kook is not some nobody. He's extremely well-known, like we said, all over the world, and he's known in Eretz Yisrael, of course, as the chief rabbi. So one more piece of a fun fact. This is it's called the Palestine Weekly. This is a newspaper that's being published every week. This entry is from April 4th, 1924, and they're doing a series on figures in Palestine. It's called Contemporary Personalities Palestine Has Seen. When is it published? Again, it's 1924. It's right around the time that Merkas HaRav is being founded. And who are they profiling here? Number 15, Rav Kook. On the back, I make copies for everyone in case you like it. On the back, they have the Sunday evening music concerts that they're inviting you to, and the sale of ordnance, as well as Mr. Abilia's pianoforte recital. So if that interests you, that's also here. But what's hilarious about this piece, which you can take a pass again, either for your folders or for the recycling bin. If you look on the front, Rav Kook was so famous, so gewaldic, so tremendous. His Eminence, Chief Rabbi Aaron HaKohen Kook. I had to read it twice to realize they got his name wrong. His name was Avraham, not Aaron. But I guess because he's HaKohen, they figured... Oh. I can't figure that out. Could you imagine? That guy lost his job really quickly. So here we are, establishing this, here we are, this prominent figure, Rav Kook, establishing a movement which, according to his treatise that he explains at length, which I did not give you tonight, which is published here in the back, one of the pieces in Chazon HaGula, and there's a full bibliography that Rav Meir Berlin put, so you shouldn't think he just made it up and collected it. Rav Kook says that this movement, it has a political component, it has a practical component, and it has a social component. It has a political component in that, as much as Rav Kook writes in one of his letters, he has a tremendous distaste for politics. Nonetheless, there are certain practical elements that need to be taken care of to create a movement. So there needs to be a political entity. There needs to be a practical entity in terms of establishing kibbutzim, moshavot, cities, unions, organizations, whatever it's going to be on the ground within this program of Yerushalayim. And finally, the social, the cultural aspect, which has to do with the building of Torah institutions and the whole culture of Judaism in the land of Israel. So the question is, why did Rav Kook establish this movement? Why? There was the Mizrahi. The Mizrahi was founded much earlier. So Rav Kook explains why. He tells you why. But still, we're not sure why he's going to call it Yerushalayim. He tells you why because he says that, and this is part of a lengthy explanation that he gives in one of the program pieces, he says, Ba'ofen ma'asi, practically, to create a revolution, what we would call maybe the ideal religious Zionist revolution, he says it's impractical given the current infrastructure, the current religious, the way that the religious life was being portrayed within the Zionist movement in general, within the World Zionist Organization, and even, he says, within Mizrahi, would not be adequate enough to accomplish what he wants to accomplish with the Yerushalayim project. The question is, so again, still, what is the Yerushalayim project and why is this so central for him? So I think the answer, and this is where the topic comes from another absolutely fascinating historical context earlier, when Rav Kook is still living in Yafo. There was a newspaper that was published by the World Zionist Organization in German. It was called Die Welt. Means the world. Okay, so this was being published at the end of the 19th century. In the beginning of the 20th century, in 1907, the World Zionist Organization began publishing a parallel newspaper. A parallel newspaper called Ha'olam. Not a very ingenious idea, but... So, this is the new newspaper, it's beginning in 1907, that's being published by the World Zionist Organization. So, it was called, apparently, Herzl decided, by the way, that the color of the newspaper, the color of this magazine, had to be yellow because it symbolized the transformation of what? The yellow badge that Jews used to have to wear. So here you're going to get in the mail a magazine called Ha'olam. If you're a member of this, you know, group in the World Zionist Organization, you're going to subscribe. You're going to get it in the mail. I guess it's like getting any other magazine. Lahavdil, I guess. Well, it's a secular magazine. It's not a Torah magazine at all. So at that time, it was being published in Eastern Europe, and because of Usishkin and others, they decided that in 1914 they were going to move the publishing headquarters. I think it was 14. No, in 1912, they moved the publishing headquarters to Odessa, to the Ukraine, where it stayed until the outbreak of World War I, and then it moved somewhere else, and this magazine actually continued until 1950. Does anybody have a copy of this magazine? It's not an easy thing to find. But imagine, you could get your hands on an actual copy of the magazine that was published in 1914 in Odessa. It would be pretty nice, wouldn't it? So thanks to Yeshiva University Microfiche, we have one. So what I did here was, instead of giving everybody a whole magazine, I just did my special copy and paste with scissors. On the front cover, you have here the masthead of the magazine from Ha'olam. And you can see the address. I can't read Cyrillic, so I can't tell you what some of this stuff says. This is the eighth year, because we're 1914. Odessa, 19th of February. Ha'adressa l'mishloach kitve yad b'shvil ha'olam hu. So if you can read that, please let me know. But I can't read it. I can't tell you what it is. So in this edition, in this, the fifth piece from Ha'olam that year, you find a monograph, an op-ed, a column. And what I did was, so instead of printing the whole magazine, I just cut and paste the column. It appears beginning on page 4. You see where it says, Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, Yafo, Yerushalayim. Rav Cook says he was asked by the editors, the non-religious editors of the Ha'olam magazine, to submit a piece about Yerushalayim. When is this being written? 1914. So this, in my mind, in a certain sense, this is like the precursor to what Rav Cook is going to describe for us as the Yerushalayim movement, the Yerushalayim party. Truth to tell, the Yerushalayim party in the end did not succeed. It did not take off. He was not able to garner enough support to actually create a practical movement or a party called the Yerushalayim Party. It ended up essentially disbanded, and the Mizrahi is what remains. Don't worry, the Mizrahi is still here, not disbanded. But I believe that this essay, which for the purpose of time, we're not going to read through the entire thing, perhaps here is the key to understanding what Yerushalayim stands for Rav Cook, why Rav Cook chose the name Yerushalayim for his movement, and why it was that Rav Cook did not think that the Mizrahi, or certainly not the World Zionist Organization, fully captured what he thought was the Yerushalayim, the Degel Yerushalayim, which is the ideal. So I would encourage everybody, if you have the time, to find a friend or an enemy or a neighbor or somebody to study this with, because it's really, it's very dense and it's very complicated. But we could kind of break this down by paragraph, and perhaps share some of the highlights in the short time that we have, and then circle back. In the first paragraph, Rav Cook says, he says, look, I was asked to write about Yerushalayim, and how can I not? What I'm doing is I'm going to just kind of pick out little pieces, and it'll be a game. If anybody can stay with me till the end, we should definitely have some kind of prize. So my goal is not to lose everybody in the middle, but we'll try to work through it. He says, on the one hand, you asked me to write something to you about Yerushalayim HaKadoshah, the Holy Yerushalayim, on the second line, on the right-hand column. Ir Elokim Sela, the City of God. Hayitachein, on the next line, first word of the line. Is it possible, She'esog Achor, that I will step back and not write to you? B'yosi Nidva L'dvar Tov, L'daper Tov Yerushalayim. You asked me to write something good about Yerushalayim, of course I'm going to answer you. But at the same time, he writes, "Avol le'uma zos, le'uma zeh." First one on the line is "zeh." Rov hatova nishbal otzoraseinu. It's so overwhelming. Yerushalayim is so grand. It's so big. It's so glorious. Lo yitein li adayin limtso ezet sinor mitzumtzam. Next line. I can't find just one way, one avenue to talk about it. It's too vast. So this is the first clue that Rav Kook says, Yerushalayim. You see, for Rav Kook, it's not just, you know, we could give a little vort, we'll give a little shir, we could have had a shir, we talk about Yerushalayim. No. It's something much bigger that you can't even condense into one angle. He says, at the same time, I've got to write something. So he begins on the second paragraph with what is going to be the basis of this Yerushalayim program. Merosh Harei Kodesh, from the beginning of the mountains, the holy mountains. Mima'amakei Nishmas Yisrael, from the depths of the soul of Israel. So first of all, you see from here that Rav Kook is talking about Nishmas Yisrael. That means the soul of the collective Jewish people. There's a national collective entity that is the Jewish people, and that transcendent entity has one giant soul. Says Rav Kook, Techiyas Ha'uma. What is Techiya? To become alive. The nation, the collective, is becoming alive. Novas Hachaim Ha'esanim. All of this is coming alive. Rav Kook starts to speak about the fact that the Jewish people, in his time, as a collective, as a nation, as a people, are now coming alive. And where does that come from? Says Rav Kook, this whole energy, it comes from the collective soul in the Jewish people. The Jewish people have one giant soul together, and there's a spiritual energy that is continuously becoming forth in the world. This appears elsewhere in Rav Kook's writing, in Orot, other places. There is this collective, it's a spiritual consciousness. And says Rav Kook, as the years go on, it grows and it expands. And that's what we're seeing in our day, the expansion in many different ways. Says Rav Kook, move to the third paragraph. It's so great, the soul that's inside of us, collectively, that we can't even grasp a shred of it. We just get just a little bit. Hinenu hochim umegashashim ki'ivrim kir kol yamei hatchiyah ha'lumit. During this national revival, the period that we're living in right now, says Rav Kook, we're feeling around in the dark like blind people. Because we don't even realize what we're experiencing. We don't even grasp the fullness of the spiritual revelation that's taking place through the unfolding of history, through the unfolding of Jewish history. We can't even grasp how grand it is, how significant it is. This is something Rav Kook is explaining to us, is developing not parallel to life. It's not that there's like a social political track, a geopolitical track, an economic track, an immigration track. No. It's not that that's a track and then there is a spiritual track. They are together through the track of the physical and the economic and the political, all these things. That is being the kli, the vessel, so to speak. These are my words, not his. This is the way through which this tchiya ha'lumit is becoming manifest. And now we can understand how this is the seeds of what religious Zionism is all about. It's not seeing it as two tracks. It's seeing that this physical development of the world, these political machinations, all of these things are all an expression of an internal process, an internal spiritual process, a tchiya ha'le'umit. Turn the page over, please. Says Rav Kook about Yerushalayim, you know what? Yerushalayim has two things. Shtei matanos tovos nishtalmu lanu b'miluam b'Yerushalayim. Two aspects of Yerushalayim complement each other. Ir Mikdash Melech, this city that is the place of holiness of our king. Gaon HaKodesh, the holy glory. Ugvuras Hechayel, and the bastion of strength. Yerushalayim, says Rav Kook, represents both. Again, a synergy. That there is a fortress, there are walls. That's what we think of. We think of the Chomos Yerushalayim. There is a political entity called Malchus Beis David, that's capital is in Yerushalayim. But it's also the Makam HaShechina, the place of the Beis HaMikdash. And Rav Kook writes that, you know what happened during the Golos? These two concepts, essentially, they've become alien to us. And there has been a kfira, a heresy of both. There has become a heresy from a Kedusha standpoint, the sanctity, that Judaism has been lost by so many. But not only that, he says there's a heresy of weakness of the poor Jew who has lost that gevura. This is the kfir of the golos. So now we return top of the next column. Well, the line, keep on top of the line. Now we return to the land, but we're trying to shed that old identity of the golos where we had these two shackles that are keeping us back. So what happens in the, now I'm on the left-hand column, if you can see where I am, where it says, Kekol Shofar. Kekol Shofar, like the blast of the shofar, Gadol, Uknes Harim Yifal, Heid Hakol V'izuz Machazeh HaTnu'ah, Yachar Hakorim Peh Echad, B'chol Tfutzat Yisrael, Asher Hud Chusham, Benu Es Yerushalayim. But now we hear the call, build Yerushalayim. What is Yerushalayim? Yerushalayim is the ideal expression of the Jewish tchiyah. This spiritual model, we could almost call it a Jewish utopia. That's what we're being called to. That's what our goal is. That's where we're going to. So Rav Kook explains that when we are engaged in this process, everyone, yechidim v'tziburim, tzi'irim v'yeshishim, young and old, we need to set a course for ourselves in which the goal is Yerushalayim, because Yerushalayim represents the ideal expression of the collective neshama as it's manifest in the world. And now, under the line, the first paragraph says, Kisha'anu bedabrim, so then he sets his sights on the building of the Beis HaMikdash. But practically, v'haruach asher yetzim b'Yerushalayim, the next paragraph, starts v'haruach, the spirit that will emanate Yerushalayim b'abnuya asher kol hagoy kulo mikatzer yishtatef ba. It's a universal spiritual message. That is Yerushalayim. Ruach Elokim yiyeh will be the spirit of Hashem. V'ruach HaKodesh yikro lo be'emes utztaka b'ga'on yitz'ad mimal l'kol kol turot zarot asher kol atov shebehem yimatzu kvar aruchim v'shmurim b'urucho uba'or kodshol v'roso. All cultures in the world, they have something redemptive. They have something valuable. But that will all be outshone by this grand vision of life, the spiritual life that's rooted in the neshama, that is Yerushalayim. And now Rav Kook concludes in the last paragraph that starts in the bottom, L'ma'aseh l'hotzi l'po'al. What is Yerushalayim for Rav Kook? It's the religious ideal. Says Rav Kook, and now we come back to our program, we need to create Degel Yerushalayim. Because Tzionut is not enough. If you take a look in the blue packet in the letters, you will find the letter. Turn the page. Can I? Thank you. If you turn the page here, we're in letter Tuf Tuf Kuf Lamed Vav. This is January 21st, 1919. Who is he writing to? His disciple and his chaver, essentially the right-hand rabbinic man of Rav Kook, that was Rav Yaakov Moshe Chalap, the Rav of Shari Tzedek, soon to become Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Merkaz HaRav, after the first Rosh Yeshiva passed away. Says Rav Kook, I can't tell you everything exactly that's going on, but he says, if you look on the paragraph that starts, Hatenua HaYerushalmis, it's 1, 2, 3, 4 paragraphs in. Hatenua HaYerushalmis, I'm on page Reishnun. Hanikris B'Shem HaYistadrut Yerushalayim V'Degel Yerushalayim. This movement that I'm trying to start, I'm writing to you from England, you're in Yerushalayim. This movement that I'm working on, that we're calling the Jerusalem Movement, the organization of Yerushalayim, the flag of Yerushalayim, it must express itself and expand to the whole world. Rav Kook was an incredible dreamer. Lahamtik ayidehod kedushasa, through the grandeur of its holiness, to sweeten es merirus hachol asher nistabcha b'hatenua hatzionit. Zionism, it's struggling, it's stumbling. Why? Because it's ensnared also with secularism. Whereas on the one hand, yes, Rav Kook says we need to build on this Tzion. Says Rav Kook, Tzion represents what? The physical building. Very famously, Rav Kook delivered, at that time it was incredibly famous, actually quite controversial, he delivered a hesped for Herzl. It was known as the Misbeid Birushalayim, and obliquely he referred to Herzl as Mashiach ben Yosef. Do not be fooled. Herzl had a long beard, Nishkin Rav. He was not anything close to a rabbi. A langabord of a Nishkin Rav. How can you call Herzl Mashiach ben Yosef? So Rav Kook explains in the Misbeid Birushalayim that Herzl did a tremendous contribution by building the physical, what we could call Tzion. But we know that in Tanakh, there are two, I guess, ways to relate to Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim. There's Tzion, and there's Yerushalayim. Mashiach ben Yosef, he says, that's the baseline, that's just the physical. But there has to be a tochen aruchani poured into it. There has to be a spiritual content. And not only that, the Rav Kook's suggestion, his vision is, there has to be, it's not just that you pour some spirituality into a vessel of chol. First, we need to start with a program. The program is the Yerushalayim program. It's the vision of a glorious Jewish soul expressed. Once you start with that vision, then you can break it down between political and practical and social. But that's why he says even the Mizrahi is not adequate in his view right now. Because it's only dealing with, on a small level, this issue and that issue. Says Rav Kook, we need a grand vision. And that is Yerushalayim. For this reason, Rav Kook explains, and you could read more in some of the letters I continued. Anybody who likes Yiddish, they have actually the translation of the next Yiddish letter. But the idea that Rav Kook is presenting to us here in this letter to his close disciple and friend, Rav Yaakov Moshe Chalap, is that we need chol, but that's not enough. We need to be aspirational Jews. And that means we need to set for ourselves a program of a religious ideal. And this is what he talks about at length when, and it's republished here in the end of the Chazon HaGeula, where Rav Kook talks about the ideals that, and it's difficult even to explain them to myself because they're so lofty and almost even esoteric and ethereal. But the idea that there's a great soul and a great godly spirit that guides all of humanity, that is most manifest through the Jewish people in its land, in its proper fashion, that is what needs to guide us. And that principle is what Rav Kook is articulating for us in his movement. Now, while the movement did not succeed, I think what I took away from some of this, if anybody's still with me, is that Yerushalayim for Rav Kook, it's not really a place. Obviously it is a place on one level, but it's about an ideal. It's about a spiritual ideal that we need to strive for. And so even though, yes, we're going to work hand in hand with all the different people who are out there, and Rav Kook is, and Rav Schwartz is going to speak more about that, I'm sure, when he delivers his next presentation. But the idea that there is an aspiration for the Jewish people as a whole, that we need to constantly be looking up. Now that, thank God, Rav Kook is describing, we're getting out of the shackles of the exile that imposes these kfiras, both from a religious standpoint, but also from a practical pride and Jewish expression standpoint. Once we're freeing ourselves from those, we, even in the diaspora, we can connect to this greater movement to try to see for ourselves, to inspire ourselves, to see this greater religious vision. And that's what Rav Kook refers to as Yerushalayim. Thank you very much. Feel free to take the source packets and the folders. And Yashikar, thank you to RCC for partnering with us. Question? Yeah, question. One?
So Rav Kook's writing 95 years ago, 100 years ago, in and around Europe, which is exploding. Does anybody even understand what he's talking about?
So it's a great question. First of all, Rav Kook's concept are extremely, extremely challenging, even for an experienced disciple of Rav Kook's writings, which I'm not yet. His ideas are extremely, extremely lofty. One may even wonder if that may have been part of the challenge that people had with understanding this idea. Although his son, Rav Tzvi Yehuda, was actually, and many Balabatim throughout Europe, were engaged in trying to put this idea into practice. So it's hard to know how much people understood or not, but there certainly is a wealth of communication that it wasn't just one great spiritual giant sitting in a room who was disconnected from reality. He was extremely connected, as you can see from the letters, to what was happening in the world and what people were thinking. This is not a presentation about Rav Kook per se, so just by the by, for those who are interested, there's a very nice biography, I think it was done by Simcha Raz, called Malachim Kibnei Adam, also translated into English as An Angel Among Men. So there you see the wide range of activities that Rav Kook was involved in. It's unbelievable. So that's a long answer to a short question, which is, it's hard to know. Even today, there's great debate about how to understand and apply Rav Kook's teachings. Rav Kook had a major talk that he called Ma'amar Hador, the speech of the generation. So now there are a lot of discussions about, in a certain sense, it was like a prophetic discussion about the challenges and vicissitudes of that generation. Well, how does it apply in our generation? What would Rav Kook have said about the Hitnatkut? What would he have said about, you know, so there's a lot of that kind of thing also, the speculation. Yeah, hi.
So what did Rabbi Kook expect to do with this? Just expect a party? What did he expect?
So he expected both. He expected a movement that was manifest in a political party, that was manifest in the same way that there were kibbutzim that identified with particular movements, Zionist, socialist, whatever it was. He hoped, his dream was, that there would be kibbutzim that would follow the Yerushalayim movement. There would be Yerushalayim kibbutzim.
And how would it be different than from Mizrahi?
So that's what Rav Kook is speaking in such grandiose terms that's essentially what he's trying to capture. And I obviously didn't do it even a scintilla of justice here, but the idea that Rav Kook is presenting is that it's more than just being narrowly focused. It's having this broad utopian spiritual vision that guides everything that you do. So that was his... Yeah, last question, and then we'll wrap it up so everybody can go to sleep. So it's certainly something that he wrote about, even in poems. We have poems from Boyce where he has poems about, beautiful poems about Yerushalayim. Where it comes from precisely, I don't know. Probably people who are experts in Rav Kook might be able to track that better. All right, thank you very much, everyone, for coming. Thank you to RCC for partnering with the Kollel. Have a great evening.